The Health Fix podcast teaches you how to take charge of your health naturally by giving you the information you need to elevate your health.
Hello there, health junkies. Welcome to another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Krause. Today's episode, I am recording myself chatting so that we can have some fun. So nevertheless, today's podcast, what am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about training yourself to increase your energy. So many people come into my office and they are just down and out, fatigued to the point where they can't get out of bed or they're slugging through the day with copious amounts of coffee and energy drinks and, you know, just sugar sweetened treats, all kinds of things they can do to get themselves through the day. And it does not have to be that way. I unfortunately see too many people trying to supplement or medicate themselves out of fatigue. It's disheartening for me to have patients come into my office and they have a thyroid condition, but every time the fatigue is increasing, it's always going back to the thyroid. It's not always the thyroid. There are so many other things that contribute to your fatigue. And in particular, I'm going to talk about four things today that I'm going to look at in terms of areas where we are causing ourselves fatigue, areas that we can train ourselves better, areas that we can improve on. So let's talk about these four areas really quick, and then I'll dive into the details about these four areas. So area number one is your environment. So many people are unfortunately going from here to there and everywhere too fast, not having time to slow down. With recent events, right now when I am recording this, we are in the midst of the coronavirus and we are stuck at home for many of us. I live just outside of Seattle, Washington, and so we have been recommended to social distance as much as possible, just like most of the state, but we haven't been officially stuck at home yet, but I have a feeling that's coming soon. San Francisco is in that boat, so our folks in Illinois, in my home state. So we have time in that case. So when this podcast is released, a lot of folks might actually have some time to take a look at their environment, and in particular, their home environment. How chaotic is your home? When's the last time you cleaned out some of the clutter? All of the clutter and chaos that's within your home contributes to your fatigue. And the reason being is your mind is constantly processing all of the things that it sees. How many of you have went to the mall? I mean, it's been a while, but recently. And you come home from the mall, do you feel tired? Do you feel worn out? A lot of folks will say, oh, it's the formaldehyde that's in all of the clothing that you saw at the mall. I would beg to differ. I would say that it might actually be all of the things that are in the mall that wear you out. The same effect happens at home. So that's number one, looking at your environment. What else contributes to that? Your desk, where you work. How messy is your desk? How messy is your bedroom? If your bedroom's messy, you can't sleep very well. If you have laundry piled up on your dresser, it may be folded, but still the mind is processing these things. So simplicity organization helps to calm the mind. The same thing goes in terms of your environment and schedule. Now, those of you who don't like schedule or routine, you're going to cringe, but the sad reality is your lack of desire to adhere to a routine or schedule is causing your fatigue. We are creatures of habit. We like routine. We like things to be predictable, because if it's predictable, we're not going to become stressed out because we know what's going to happen. It's the unknown that freaks the body out. And when you're in a state of sympathetic dominance, there's two states, there's sympathetic and parasympathetic. Most of you have heard both of those terms. Parasympathetic is what we want to be in more of the time, the rest and digest and build up the body state, versus sympathetic, the fight or flight, break down the body state. When we're in sympathetic, more often we're more prone to injury, we're prone to storing our nutrients and not using them to repair the body. That's why people gain weight when they're stressed. That's why they get injured more when they're stressed. So looking at your routines and your habits, these are huge in terms of setting your environment. So I'm going to go a little bit into that detail today as well. Now I have some notes. That's why I keep looking down because I keep myself on track. So building up your muscle, your strength against stress, we have a couple of things we need to do to build up that. And in particular, one of the big muscles that we need to build up to fight stress is our posture. So all of our muscles that are affected by poor posture, our rib cage or diaphragm, also our pelvis. So folks can predict how stressed you are based on what muscles are tight. Also your posture. This day and age, we're all kind of hovered over tech items, you know, from the phone, from the computer, things of that nature. But then add stress to that and what happens? We've got our shoulders for earrings, we're moving forward. And if we look at the sideways view of a lot of folks' heads are going forward and their shoulders are hunched forward like this. I see a lot of folks in my office like this. I challenge you after this to look and see what your posture looks like, just shaking it out and see what you do naturally. When you have that forward posture, these muscles become tight. These ones in the back become stretched and long. So we have shortened muscles, long muscles in the back. Tight muscles in terms of shortened and lengthened muscles are weak. They may be tight, and a lot of people think, oh, I need to stretch them. No, we need to figure out what to do to help them move better, working on their mobility. Same thing goes with the hip, because when we start doing this business and our rib cage starts to be collapsed down because we're hunched over. So for example, I'm going to take the camera here for a minute and we're hunched over like this. See my abdomen kind of leaning over like that. When we're in that state all the time, we're compressing muscles, we're impeding our ability to breathe, and we're also having issues in terms of being able to tell our body we do not need to be in fight or flight mode. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit today. Number three is the fitness component. Now, I'm not talking about you need to get out there and start running marathons or becoming extreme fit like some of the ninja warrior folks out there. What I'm talking about is general fitness. A lot of us are working out wrong and we're creating more stress on our body than we need to, and prolonging the stress throughout the day, causing us to become more fatigued. And depending on when you work out in the day, it could compound the situation. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later as well. So choosing strategic types of workouts and how you do those workouts and how you breathe during those workouts can make a huge difference in whether you have energy or not for that day and the next day and the next day into infinity. All right, now the last thing and the four things we're going to talk about today is how we are going to control our breath and how we're going to control our breath to control our energy and our energy output. Now, there's a lot of really great research out there from Navy SEALs, and in particular, breathing patterns that go along with combat in high-stress situations, things of that nature. And a lot of us acknowledge them, but don't put ourselves into that environment because we're like, well, I'm not in combat. Why would I need to breathe that way? Well, if your body doesn't know that you're not in combat because your body's stuck in fight or flight mode all the time, it's no difference. You could have bullets flying at you all over, or you could be sitting at home completely stressed out and your body doesn't know one from the other. And right now, this day and age, with all of the coronavirus stuff and all of the fear, a lot of us are stuck in sympathetic mode more than ever. And this is why I really wanted to do this podcast at this time and hope that a lot of folks will be able to listen to it in this timely manner, because I think it's so crucial to our longevity, to our immunity, to our overall satisfaction and enjoyment in life, that we understand how to manage stress effectively, because it is contributing to your amount of energy overall, and it is contributing to the amount of fatigue that you experience. Fatigue shouldn't be ignored. It shouldn't be brushed off as, oh, I'm just getting older, I'm going to be more tired. No, it's not that. We need to figure out how you're working with your energy and what you're doing. And today, I'm going to go through all four of those things, and we'll go one by one And I hope that if you are interested in this, take some notes, because I'm going to kind of break down quite a few different things. And of course, in my podcast notes at thehealthfixpodcast.com or drjkrausnd.com, I'm going to have that written down there. Now, another thing to note is that if you're digging this information, I have a course that can help you to get rid of energy for good, get that weight off, get your hormones balanced, all of that jazz. And I'll give you some details at the end of the podcast. All right. So let's dive in. Training yourself to keep energy up. How do we do it? Like I mentioned, environment. So number one thing to do is look around you. How messy is your environment, as I mentioned before? How organized can you make things? Transfer this also to your environment at work. Transfer this to your environment if you work out at home. Organize everything that you possibly can so that you don't have clutter, so that you don't have stacks of piles of papers, things of that nature. Because all of this other stuff fatigues your brain because your brain's thinking about it. Now, those of you who have kids and you're like, there's no way I can organize my house so that it doesn't have a mess. Okay, fine. I have dog toys all over upstairs on my living room floor, but I have a box that they go into. I tried to teach the dogs how to put the toys in the box. Didn't work out so well. But I don't have a lot of other things out that are cluttering. That is my only thing going on there. So finding a home for everything that you have in your house and keeping it legit organized. Huge. Same thing at work. Now, the next thing in terms of environment is looking at how do you feel in your environment, in your home? Do you feel comfortable? Are there items in your home that just don't work, like an old chair that doesn't feel good and it's just taking up space? Do you have a space you can retreat to that you feel comfortable in, that you feel cozy in? I have a little lady cave. I wouldn't even call it a cave. It's not a dark room. It's actually quite bright. And I love putting myself as close to nature as I can. So in my case, I put shells all around because I love the ocean and I love being connected to the ocean any way I can. So I have sand and shells and I have these pinwheels that we've had since my wedding because they just look cool and I like them. So thinking about what you could do in a certain area where that's like, that's your cave. You can retreat there. You can feel comfortable there. This will come in handy later as I talk about tricks to work on breathing, things of that nature. So I challenge you to finding a comfortable space. Maybe you take a closet, take the door off the closet and you create yourself a cave in there. Whatever it may be, finding some space that you can feel comfortable in your environment. The next thing is looking at your schedules and routines. These are part of our environment. Right now is a great time if you are quarantined at home, because you're not going anywhere. And so you can make new routines. You can add to your super routines you already have. But we are creatures of habit. The less we are guessing, so the less the brain has to guess about what's happening, the less we are going to have issues in terms of stress. So for example, I really like folks to figure out when they're going to have breakfast, lunch, and dinner and stick with the routine. I like folks to figure out when they're going to go to bed and when they're going to wake up and stick with that too. Because we live by something called a circadian rhythm. Our bodies naturally have a time when they want to go to bed and a time when they want to wake up. And we can train ourselves to having certain routines. Now, I'm not a fan of making people who are a little bit more of night owls go to bed early and wake up early if that's not their rhythm. Now, granted, I also will recommend if your work schedule doesn't allow you to do this, it might be something to think about if you can't get a handle on your fatigue and your stress in your life, to find a job where you can go to work later so that you can stay up later. Because truly, I have found that this is a source of increased stress for some folks who are night owls. There are folks that are legit night owls and that their cortisol levels will stay up a little bit higher and drop a little bit later in the evening. Cortisol is supposed to be at its peak between 6 and 8 a.m. for most folks. If you're a night owl, you might have a peak maybe more like 8 to 10 a.m. But nevertheless, every single one of us have a routine that our body should be following in terms of a circadian rhythm. But sometimes that routine becomes deranged, probably the best term I could give it. And meaning we're supposed to have like this roller coaster. The peak of the roller coaster is at 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. And then it's going to slowly start to drop down as we go throughout the day, getting to the low point around 8, 9 p.m. And then it's going to slowly rise while we're sleeping. Unfortunately, some people have what's known as a serious roller coaster here, like a sawtooth kind of roller coaster, where you're up and down, up and down, up and down with cortisol. And that usually happens over long periods of time where someone's been under stress and their body stops recognizing when they're supposed to create cortisol and when they're not supposed to produce cortisol. Cortisol is the main hormone related to stress. Cortisol can have, did I say cortisone? Cortisol, sorry. Cortisol is the main hormone related to stress. And what it does is it helps us to regulate when we're awake and when we're asleep, but also when we need to mobilize the sympathetic nervous system in terms of a threat. Unfortunately, our genetics have not caught up to this concept of, oh, three meetings today back to back are not a bear chasing us. Our body doesn't know the difference. It's confused. So we have to actually work with our bodies a little bit to kind of move through the day and not recognize that back-to-back meetings or things of that nature are stressors. Now let's think about that for a minute. How could we improve our environment to better deal with back-to-back meetings? Number one, don't schedule them back-to-back. Give yourself 15 minutes of flex time in between. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people are trying to cram so much into a day that they just boom, 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 back everything right up. That does nothing for you. It just stresses you out more. I've had patients who are completely stressed out and fatigued come in my office for acupuncture for anxiety and tell me, okay, it's 1 o'clock. I need to be out by 1:45 because I have to get across town to do X, Y, and Z. And then I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And then I'm going to do this, 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 and this. That acupuncture session is really not going to work for you because you're going to be already thinking about the next thing you have to do and not knowing if you're going to get there on time. This is the problem with fatigue. We are overcommitting ourselves and we're not taking the time to breathe and relax. So let's go back to cortisol for a minute and our environment. I've talked about surroundings. I've talked about stacking too many things up. Another big thing about environment is energy vampires. Who do you surround yourself with? Do you have friends who are complainers that just can't seem to find the positive side of anything? And then they start talking to you and all of a sudden now it's like this really depressing Debbie Downer conversation and you've gotten sucked into this. And then you get done with that conversation, that friend leaves off the phone, whatever it may be, off the text, and you feel like, oh, I'm worn out. If you have people in your life that wear you out, you got to think about different ways to approach them. Meaning, in some cases, you could, you know, move away from being friends with them, try to convince them to be positive, easier said than done. But if this is someone that you're intricately associated with, maybe a partner, maybe a child, something of that nature, you have to ask yourself the right questions. You have to help the mind to deal with what's going on in your environment. Meaning, what can I learn from this situation? What is the gift of this situation? What is the benefit? So trying to work on mindset and changing your perception of your interaction with someone. Granted, if you could just easily be like, okay, I'm just not going to interact with this person anymore, great. But sometimes this is harder, easier said than done. We have family members that we need to interact with. Yeah, I'm not saying blow bridges up and, you know, burn bridges, blow them up, not talk to people. It's all about communication and figuring out what's important to you right now and how to talk with these folks about expressing how you feel and perhaps letting some of these folks go or dealing with how you react in the moment to them. Because anytime you have a conversation with someone, anytime you interact with someone, right now you are interacting with me and you're developing an opinion and how you feel about the things I'm saying. And for some people, some of the things I'm saying might be kind of scary because this requires some serious change to get on top of your energy. So, things to think about. Asking questions to help improve your mindset. What are you going to learn from this situation? What can you do to make the best out of this situation? These things will help change your mindset, but they will also help with your reaction to these things. Now, earlier I had mentioned breakfast, lunch, dinner, sleep, and wake times. Also habits in terms of exercise, having a predictable time that you're going to go. Maybe you have to switch it, like Tuesdays and Thursdays, you can only go at 8 a.m., but you know the rest of the week you're going at 5 p.m. Okay, that's still a routine. Your body kind of knows what's happening. So thinking about making a routine for almost everything you do in your life, in addition to your fun time, scheduling in fun at least 5 minutes a day, scheduling in some chill time, breathing time. And I'm going to be talking about breathing in a couple of seconds. It's a great segue into it. So making breathing and mobility, motion of the body, movement as part of a routine that's going to help you with your ability to breathe, your ability to manage stress in the moment. Because how you breathe is intricately connected to how well your body manages stress. Because if you're hunched over, neck's going forward towards the tech, like I mentioned before, all these muscles here, a lot of these muscles in your neck are your secondary breathing muscles. So they call them your accessory breathing muscles. If these guys are clamped down and you're also hunched over so that your diaphragm is compressed, your body is going to constantly be thinking that you have a bear that's so big chasing you and you just can't seem to escape it. And so what happens if your body thinks it's running a marathon all stinking day? You're going to be tired. It makes sense. But a lot of people don't connect that. A lot of people are too busy trying to find supplements and herbs and energy drinks and coffee to get through the day. And I get it. You got to do what you got to do. But I'm here to try to explain that these things are not sustainable. Eventually, you are going to get to the point where some of my patients are at where they can't even get out of bed to function. I don't want that for you. I don't want it for anybody, and that's why I wanted to do this podcast. So think of everything I'm talking about today as a way to help to balance out that coffee, balance out some of the sugar-sweetened treats, and work on yourself as you're weaning yourself off of the crutches you're using to keep your energy going. All right, so now let's talk about number three, working on that. Number three, I jumped over number two. Sorry about that, guys. Number two, let's work on building that muscle to tolerate stress a little bit more through breathing, since I was segueing into that anyway. My brain just, there you have it. So performance under pressure of any kind, whether it's a sporting athlete versus a everyday Joe, looking at your work, looking at your day, it all is the same. Now, you might not be at the elite level of sports, but every single one of us has stress, and every single one of us deals with it differently, some better than others, but breathing is one of the main key factors to keeping our stress levels in check. Now, I mentioned that we've got issues with the neck. I've mentioned the rib cage and diaphragm. What I didn't talk about is shoulders as related to this, pelvis as related to this. A lot of people have shoulder pain. In fact, I would venture to say that because we've done a lot more education on needing core strength and this and that to help with back pain, I'd be venturing to say that next we're going to have some shoulder issues, because a lot of people are not connecting that your shoulders and your hips, your pelvis and your shoulders are connected. And when you're stressed, you're going to be bringing both of them forward, and you're going to be compressing their ability to move properly. And what that leads to when you've got a forward shoulder is you're stretching your rotator cuff muscles. The more you stretch them and they're in a locked long position, the weaker they become. Same thing goes with the muscles in the glutes and hips area. Perhaps you've heard of the muscle, the iliopsoas. It's two muscles put together. The psoas comes from the end of your rib, so your 12th rib area, goes down to your pelvis and joins in with a muscle called the iliacus. and they form the iliopsoas as they go down to the inner side of your thigh and attaches something called the lesser trochanter on your femur. So this muscle is a hip flexor. But if you're sitting a lot and you're hunched over a lot, that muscle can become extremely shortened and it can pull on your ribs and pull on your spine. And what happens? You're going to get back pain. Chronic back pain is going to lock up your hips. It's going to lock up your pelvis. It's going to lock up your pelvic floor. And it's also going to affect your shoulders. In acupuncture, we talk a lot about the crisscross balance, which are known as myofascial connections. So I'm going to bring this up a little bit here. So from here to this hip there, this shoulder to this hip here, we have a X in terms of tissue that crosses. And acupuncturists figured this out thousands of years ago, that we can use certain acupuncture points to help crisscross the balance. It's super cool. But those acupuncture points can only do so much if we don't help ourselves breathe better and we don't help ourselves to release the tight muscles. It's hard to work on posture. I admit that I'm constantly rolling my shoulders back all the time to try to get myself to not do this. I started at an early age to do this because I developed breasts a little bit early and I didn't want to have them. And so I was trying to hide quite a bit. Ladies have that problem in some cases, but there might also be just the stress taking the body over as well. I, in fact, have a left shoulder that likes to turn in quite a bit when I get stressed, and it's the weirdest thing. So I challenge you to paying attention to what your body does when you're in a moment of increased stress. Now, what can we do in this case to help alleviate this? If you've looked at all on YouTube or online, you've seen people arching their backs over foam rollers, on stability balls with their chests open like that. All that stuff is amazing. And I highly recommend anything you can do to open your rib cage. And I will put some videos that I like as well in my podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com or thehealthfixpodcast.com so you can see what I'm recommending. I also recommend working on your rib cage to help to open it up on your own. I've had the pleasure of going through some certification courses where folks taught ways to open up your rib cage and also paying attention to how your rib cage is designed, or maybe not even designed is a good term, how your rib cage is looking right now based on how you breathe. So for example, on your rib cage, I'm going to move the computer down a little bit here so you can see my rib cage. There we go. So I'm pressing in and I'm getting to the point on my infrasternal angle, meaning where my rib cage meets. And we've got a bone there called the xiphoid process. Be careful. Sometimes it kind of feels funny to touch that. And what you want to look at is I want you to see that angle there. There should be a 90 degree angle. So take your fingers, find your rib cage, and put your fingers just under the rib cage. And then make your fingers meet. Do you have a 90-degree angle? Meaning, does it go up and down? And could you put, say, a protractor there? And would it tell you that you have a 90-degree angle? Now, in my case, I'm pretty good in that angle. I have seen many folks who have angles, and I'm going to try to do my hands to do this to make it easier, that are much more narrow, almost like 45 degrees. And I've also seen folks who have angles that are much more like closer to 100 or 120 degrees. Now, what does all of that jazz mean? Well, if you have a narrow angle to your rib cage, you're having some difficulties with exhalation where you're basically, you're compressing your rib cage too hard when you exhale. So you have too forceful of exhales. Whereas someone who has a wide angle, so this is called the infrasternal angle, these folks are too lax on their compression when they exhale. Now, if you're normal like me and it's 90, okay, you don't have to think about those things. All you're worried about is I need to work on just controlling my breath in general. One of the most important things to do with controlling your breath is working on counting and training yourself, basically building the muscle to ensure that you are breathing properly. Now, you might be thinking, well, I don't know if I have any breathing issues. Okay. Let's talk about sighing. Do you find yourself sighing out of nowhere throughout the day? Do you find yourself holding your breath? If you're holding your breath or you're sighing, you are struggling to breathe properly. These are big issues. A lot of folks also might be breathing, but they might be breathing too fast, hyperventilation. So too fast, too shallow of breaths can also cause issues. So check your sternal angle out and see what's going on. See if it's too narrow, like less than 90, or if it's too wide, more than 90 in terms of that angle. For those of you who have a narrow, you can take a big breath in, and then you take a very slow, gradual breath out. And those who have that really wide angle, those folks take a big breath in, and then take a little bit more of a forceful gradual. So, versus breath out. Play with that. Now, I'm also going to recommend working on how you breathe and little techniques in terms of counting and little techniques in terms of visualizing a breathing box. These are some techniques stolen from the Navy SEALs in terms of helping folks in combat situations breathe better. So we'll talk about that here in a second. I want to kind of go a little bit more into adaptations that your body has to basically impede you from breathing properly. So I mentioned the rib. Now the shoulders. Your pec muscles, so your chest muscles here. I want everyone to press right here. Is it sore? If you didn't have like pec day 2 days ago or a day ago and you're not lifting weights, these muscles shouldn't necessarily be too tight. They're only tight when someone spends a lot of their day like this. Now, these guys can be stretched. They could be stretched in a doorway. They could be stretched while opening up on a stability ball or over a foam roller, things of that nature. But these guys will impede your rib cage ability to move. And then they're going to impede your shoulder's ability to move, like the shoulder blade, all of this business. So if all of that's compressed, now we're going to be sending messages via the vagus nerve. So this is your fight or flight nerve. And it also controls sympathetic and parasympathetic, so chill mode as well. But if you're stuck like this and you're compressing your rib cage, you're going to be stuck in sympathetic mode no matter what. So what I'm posing here and why I'm recommending on posture and working on breathing and opening up your rib cage is because it sends a message back to your brain that everything's okay. There's nothing to be worried about. There's nothing chasing us. We are in our chill posture. And there are postures that you can get into to help you feel chill too. Now, here's another thing, your hips. How tight are your hips? A lot of people will tell me that their biggest issue is tight hips. That tells me right away they are stuck in fight or flight mode. So keeping that in mind, how hard is it for you to take one leg and bring it across the body? So basically cross your leg over. Is that a problem? Does it hurt? If that's a problem for you, that is a sign that it is going to be affecting your breathing, but it's also a sign that you are stuck in a sympathetic state. So all of those different things are crucial to helping you get out of fight or flight mode and convince your body that it's not being chased by some crazy bear and zapping all of your energy. So essentially what I'm saying is you can get your energy back by relaxing these muscles, opening them up, breathing better. All right. So let's talk a little bit about one way that you can work on your fitness and build that muscle to help you to have more energy. So a lot of people will come into my office and say, Doc, I'm so fatigued. I can't even work out. Like it's out of control. And I go, okay, all right. So what have you been doing for workouts? And they tell me that they've been doing HIIT. So HIIT, high intensity interval training. And they've been doing it like 3 days a week. And they've been getting on the bike or the treadmill the rest of the time for an hour and just kind of hammering out a workout. But what they don't tell me is they haven't looked at their heart rate. We have a lot of devices right now that can look at heart rate and heart rate variability. Now, I'm a true believer that there's certain devices that look at heart rate variability much better, they're more accurate than others. Having a chest strap for looking at heart rate and assessing heart rate variability is probably one of the best ways to check things. Garmin has some great ones. Polar 70 or something like that has some good stuff. Morpheus is a type of app and a watch, a band that you can use to assess your heart rate variability. I learned about this through my BioForce conditioning coach program and Joel Jameson. He's the guy that is in charge of that, the head coach, if you will. And he created this band type of app to help you with your heart rate variability. Now, there's also other products online called Whoop and things of that nature. The cool part about this is that its sensor is similar to what you can put on your rib cage to look at your heart rate and your heart rate variability. Now, Apple Watches and Fitbits will also look at your heart rate. While they're not as accurate as the devices I just mentioned, they can still give you a lot of information about what's going on with your body, how hard you're pushing yourself, or how hard you're not pushing yourself, for that matter, too. Because sometimes I'll find that folks might do heavy grinds of exercise, but they do it for too long and a slow pace. So I wanted to talk a little bit about how you can modify your exercise to get the most out of it, but also be able to put yourself into a recovery state. Because most folks are grinding the exercises out after they're already tired all day long, and they're not putting themselves in a recovery state because they don't know how to do so. So let's talk about how we can get your workouts to work for you. In particular, if you are someone who walks a lot, or perhaps you do elliptical or some of the cardio machines and things of that nature, but you're not necessarily lifting weights, I want you to look at what you do on a daily basis. Because if Monday, when, you know, every single day of the week, you're hopping on an elliptical and you're doing 30 minutes on the elliptical, I mean, that's like what you do it at the same pace every single time. You are fatiguing yourself. You are creating your energy issue. It's not all of it, but it's some of it. Compound it with the other two things that I've mentioned in terms of breathing and posture and in terms of environment. But if we look at it in terms of cardio, and working out. And I know a lot of people are probably going, but cardio fatigues you completely. Yes and no, it's how you do it. But it's also in terms of where you're at in the fitness continuum. If you've lifted weights for a while and you do cardio with the weights, we have to take it up a little notch for you. But if you are at a state where you're a beginner working out, or you just haven't done a lot of working out, or say you've taken a break and went back to it, this is the part for you. So for example, let's say you walk every single day of the week and you just walk for the same amount of time at the same pace. What you're missing out on is you're not giving yourself recovery from what you're doing. Now you might think to me, 30 minutes is not that much. I'm not walking that fast. Okay, that's true. But that's not including all the stressors in your life, your environment, your work, your posture, everything else that's contributing to stress in a day. And this is why folks who tell me, like, doc, I can't even walk anymore. Yeah, because you weren't giving yourself recovery days in your walking sense. So for example, if we look at it in terms of conditioning yourself to reduce stress and improve recovery, you're going to be switching on that parasympathetic rest and digest recovery build you up component of your workout so much better. So let's talk about it. Stimulation, meaning you're actual pushing yourself a little bit 2 days a week, not every single day of the week. And then working on 2 days a week of recovery mode exercise. That's 4 days a week. You're getting movement in, 2 days off, essentially. And two of those days, you're going to push yourself a little bit, not crazy, but you're going to have 2 days where you're going to recover. And they're going to alternate with the day in between. So stimulation day, for example, is going to be Monday, maybe Monday. Tuesday is going to be a recovery day. Wednesday is going to be an off day. Thursday is going to be a stimulation day. Friday is going to be an off day. Same with Saturday, Sunday. And when I say off days, you've got two recovery off days. So Monday stimulation, I didn't say that too clear. Monday stimulation, Tuesday is going to be a recovery, an active recovery day. Wednesday is going to be an off day. Thursday is going to be a stimulation day. And then Friday is going to be a active recovery day. And then Saturday, Sunday off. So what you're going to do in this case, instead of going out and walking 30 minutes every single day for infinity and wondering why you're fatigued, you're going to induce a little bit of parasympathetic recovery mode in your body by doing this style of working out. So let's go, for example, first stimulation day. And I'm going to be looking down a little bit because I have notes and I want to say it clearly for you. So you're going to be walking about 30 to 60 minutes. You can choose, you know, wherever you are in the continuum. I know I've been using the 30-minute mark. That's for folks who are, you know, pretty fatigued, just getting back in. I wouldn't push it. I would go by like adding a couple minutes each week and see how you feel as things improve. But let's start with baseline at 30, with 60 minutes being the max. You're going to watch your heart rate. So if you got a Fitbit, or say you've got an Apple Watch, or maybe you've got a Garmin, you know, maybe you've got all the gear, whatever it may be, you're going to watch your heart rate for 130 to 150 beats per minute. And you want to stay in that range. You don't want your heart rate to go over that range while you're walking. Now, you might be saying to me, Doc, how do I do that? How do I keep myself in that range? I shoot up and down pretty crazy in my heart rates. Breathing. So you're going to be working on breathing. And I'm going to talk about breathing last in this sequence of the four things that help with countering fatigue. So stay tuned for that. But right now, we're just going to talk about what you're going to do with the workouts. So you're going to maintain that 130 to 150 beats per minute with the rest, like a more or less rate of perceived energy expend, you know, like exhaustion, rate of perceived exhaustion, RPE, for short, if you know the lingo, of somewhere around 7 to 8. Like, you're not completely tanked, but you're feeling it. Like, you know that you're walking at a rate that is getting you going. You know, you're moving. To get 130, 150, you might have to do some hills depending on how your body works. But this is a little bit more of a clipping rate than a little stroll in the park. And for some of you who are super fatigued and going, gosh, I don't even know how I could do that, totally fine. Keep it at the 30 minutes. Maybe you're doing 20 minutes. Maybe you're even doing 10. You got to work it from where you're at. Maybe it's 5 minutes. I do have some people where we've worked the same training program 5 minutes, and then we work up a minute at a time each week. So something to think about. Now, in terms of the recovery, the next day, you're going to go out and you're going to do 30 to 45 minutes. And maybe if we're in a walking state and that's just what you have in terms of resources to work with, maybe you don't have an elliptical, maybe you don't have a bike or a rower, I would recommend switching, to be honest with you, in terms of what you're doing. But say you don't have anything else, walking again. But this time we're going to be walking at a rate where you're slower. Your heart rate is going to be lower than 130. beats per minute. You're going to keep it below that. And you're going to do about 15 minutes of walking if you only have walking, but you can do row, you can do elliptical, whatever it may be. And then you're going to do 15 minutes of some what I call mobility work, meaning we're going to work movement in a different pattern for you. So we might be doing marching to the side and marching to the other side. Or maybe if you're up for your lateral skipping, you can do some skipping to the side, skipping to the other side. That kind of stuff for 15 minutes. Some trainers will have these things called ladders. They look like little ladders and you kind of run back and forth in between them. That's another thing. And I have someone doing this where your heart rate is going to be under 130. You're going to be keeping it somewhere around 120-ish or so, 100 or so. Nothing crazy, but you're going to be moving your body in different methods. Now, a lot of people are familiar with the movement grapevine, where you're kind of going crisscross with your legs, moving across from one side to the other. Some folks call it carioca. Whatever you call it, you could be doing that and mixing it up between marching side to side, the grapevine movement side to side, skipping side to side, things of that nature. But watching to make sure that the amount that you're doing it at is not pushing you over max 130 beats per minute, but ideally you're wanting to be more on the 120 range. Now, if you are over 65 years of age and you're listening to this, your heart rates are going to change a little bit. So feel free to message me at info@drjkrausnd.com. So info@drjkrausnd.com, and just message me and I'll get you those details. Now, after you do this, and this is 30, 45 minutes on the max. So those of you who are just starting, maybe you're doing 5 minutes of this, just like you're doing the 5 minutes of walking. Baby steps here and moving up by 1 minute at a time. Now, the next day, say it's Wednesday, you're off. You're just chilling. You could do a very gentle walk in the park kind of walk, but don't go crazy. I don't want you pushing it. Don't get up to that 130, 150 beats per minute. We're saving that. That's going to be Thursday. So this is stimulation number two. So what we're doing in this case is we're going to get your heart rate back up to what your 70% of max would be. So in that case, what we're doing in this realm is we're going to switch it up. We're not going to have you just walk at 30 minutes just doing something. We're going to have you doing 70% of your heart rate max. And you can look to see what your heart rate max would be on a chart. There's heart rate charts based on age out there. And so this is going to be where you're going to do 10 to 12 second intervals. And you're going to start with about 10 reps or so. And you get a 60 second rest in between. So with this, you are going to speed up a little bit to 70% of your max, which is not going to be quite to that 130, 150 range. I can't say that 100%. Depends on your age, okay? So this is why the 130, 150 for maintaining it for 30 minutes, if that's working on breath control. This next one for the 70%, this is working on your ability to control with intervals. Now with these intervals, one of the things that you can do if you want to get really strict with it or just kind of see if you're improving, this is huge. I really do recommend people do this, is that within that 12 to 10 seconds of the interval of going to your 70% max, you want to see if you are, how far you're going. So if you're rowing, see how far you go, walking, see how far you go, especially if you have like a way to track it or even visual tracking. I can track how far I can get in 10 to 12 seconds down a block. I mean, you can use like, oh, I got to house number 1010 or something of that nature. So pay attention to that and see how it went. Now, in terms of reps, you can work up to 20 reps of this. I highly recommend starting at 10. So you'll notice that you'll get through this pretty quickly, but make sure that you have a 60 second rest. Now, the day after this, this is back to recovery. And this is back to where we're going to repeat something very similar to what we did on Tuesday for the recovery. Remember, I was talking about walking and chilling for about 15 minutes or doing the elliptical or whatever, you know, bike row, whatever machine you have, and then doing a little bit of the lateral movements techniques. But instead, with this day, I want you to do some different movements. Maybe you have some stairs. You can climb up one stair, down one stair, up, down. Maybe you have a box. You could step up on the box, step down on the box for 5 minutes. Then perhaps do some of the Kari Yoga or the grapevine for a few minutes. And then you could perhaps do a little bit of medicine ball work if you have that. You could jump rope for 5 minutes. But the idea here is keeping your heart rate in check and not going over the 30 to 45 minute range. It all depends on where you're at. And I can give a lot more examples in my notes at drjkrausnd.com. So the idea here overall is making sure that you have stimulation days where you work a little harder, followed by days that are rest days afterwards. Now, they're not rest days in a sense where you're sitting on the couch doing nothing. You're actually just trying to put your body into a parasympathetic mode. So you're enhancing the muscles that help you, so the signals in the muscles that help you to induce recovery, so that every single exercise that you do, you're not like continually just blowing out all your reserves. So the next thing I want you to be thinking about in this case is how you end your workout. Now, for some of you, what I just mentioned in terms of the stimulation and break, you might be thinking like, man, that sounds a little basic for me. Okay, don't worry. There are more advanced sequences. I will put them in my podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com. But going back to how we end each exercise round. Maybe you're listening to what I say and you're not buying into it. Fine, that's okay. But if you do nothing else after listening to this podcast but one thing, do this. When you end each workout, whatever your workout may be, I want you to work on some breathing. 5 minutes in parasympathetic breathing. Because too many of us end our workouts and then boom, we're like out the door to the next thing. Or boom, we're in the shower, taking a shower, rushing to try to get to work. We're still stuck in sympathetic mode from our workout. Then we go and eat and we're still in sympathetic mode. What happens? Our body's going to store what we just ate because our cortisol is probably going to be up to a certain level. You add some food in that boosts the blood sugar and guess what? You start storing fat. And you wonder why all of your workouts, you're putting so much into them and you're not seeing results. It's because you're not putting yourself into parasympathetic state to calm your nervous system enough for it to go into repair and rest and digest. Instead, it's staying in freak out mode and break you down and set you up for injury mode. Nobody wants that. So at the end of each workout, 5 minutes, put the timer on your watch, put the timer on your cell phone, and I want you to lay down in what's called a 90-90 position. You're laying on your back and your legs are going to be up. So hips are going to be at a 90, legs are going to be up onto a bench. And you're going to be laying there with your arms out in a T, breathing. I'm going to recommend a 5-count inhale, a 2-count hold, and a 7-count exhale. Keeping in mind, if you have a narrow angle, you want to make sure that you have a gentle exhale. But if you have a wide angle of your ribs, you want to have a little more of a forceful exhale of those 7 seconds. So, 5-count inhale, 2-count hold, 7-count exhale, 5 minutes of repetitive breathing like this. This has been shown to put you into parasympathetic mode so that you finish your workout already telling your body it's recovery time. So you're giving your body the right signals after your workout to go into recovery. This is huge. Huge, huge stuff. And I'll tell you from personal experience, since I started doing this, I'm feeling a lot better after workouts. My energy is much better and I'm not dragging during the day. I was killing myself for a long time, not recovering, just basically finish the workout, boom, into the shower, off, you know, eat, day, go. And it was go time for me all the time. My body was stuck in sympathetic mode. And finding that switch and working with breathing is a game changer for so many people, me and a lot of the patients that I've worked with in this realm. So in my podcast notes at drjcrossnd.com, I will have a video for what positional parasympathetic breathing looks like so that my little hand diagram there is not the only thing that you have in terms of visualizing what it looks like. So stay tuned for that, because if you do nothing else and you have one takeaway from this podcast, that is what I want you to have. All right, so let's move on to controlling breath. Because it's part of the parasympathetic breathing at the end of workouts, but it's also part of what you're doing throughout the day when you have a stressor, what you're doing throughout your workouts to keep your body in check. Stay within a heart rate zone. Stay within 70% max. Stay within 130 to 150 beats per minute, depending on if you are in the stimulation, which is the 130 to 150 mode, or you're in the recovery mode, which is 70% of your max. So how do we do this? First and foremost, we want our posture to be good. We want our shoulders back. We want to shake it out. We want our neck to feel more neutral. For some people, it means you got to do the pie in the face. Push your chin in a little bit. Sometimes I have people actually physically do that. Or you think about someone smashing a pie in your face and you're bringing your neck back. It actually should feel okay. It shouldn't hurt. If it hurts, message me. We got to figure something else out. But if you look at someone who's forward like this, which is a lot of us when we're stressed, and you push the pie, smash the pie in the face, it pushes the neck back. So you're in better position there. So we're in a good position for breathing. So say that you are in the middle of your stimulation workout. You're trying to maintain your 130 to 150 beats per minute, and you're noticing that you're totally pushing higher than 150. And you're only 10 minutes into your walking, or you're only 10 minutes into your biking. breathing. So we're working now on breathing in terms of inhaling and exhaling. What I want you to do in this case is take 5-count inhales, 7-count exhales. Don't hold it at this point because you're moving. You don't want to hold the breath. Holding the breath is only good for when you get into the relaxation state, the parasympathetic breathing. So here, while you're breathing in and you're breathing out and you're moving, look at your heart rate. When your heart rate starts to go down as you're moving, you're going to notice that you are doing better because you're breathing through it. This can be translated to stressors in life as well. When we get stressed, our heart rate goes up because the body perceives whatever it is as a threat. Maybe you haven't even encountered the threat. Maybe you have to have a hard conversation with someone. Breathing beforehand can be extremely useful. The SEALs use a method of box breathing, meaning they're visualizing one end of the box lighting up when you take an inhale, and then across the box lighting up as you have the top of that inhale. Then as you exhale out the bottom part of that square or box, and then as you continue your exhale, you're having the side, the bottom. So inhale up, up, exhale, side, down. Inhale up, across, exhale, side, down. Only took me 3 tries to say that correctly. So you're breathing with the box and visualizing that box. So you might be walking and kind of visualizing that. Or maybe you're in a state where you're at work and you've got to go into a meeting or something just stressed you out. Or maybe you looked at your bank account, it was overdrawn and you could feel the heart start to go like this. Box breathing. Really chilling. If you really need to put yourself into a parasympathetic state and just like flip that switch super hard, lay down. Sitting down can help too, because as you're standing, our bodies have to beat, our heart rate has to be a little bit higher as you're standing up. So sitting down and laying down are different degrees of bringing it down even further. That's why parasympathetic breathing after workouts, you are laying down because you're going to flip that switch into parasympathetic mode super fast. So if you find yourself getting into panic attack or really anxiety mode, lay down. Do the 90 position where you've got your hips flexed at a 90 and you've got your knees at a 90 and your legs are on a chair and you're flat out on your back with your arms out like this, chilling. It works. I've done it multiple times. I fully wouldn't be talking about it if it didn't work. So I talked about box breathing. Another type of breathing is working on the 5-count inhale, 7-count exhale. So if box breathing doesn't work for you, while you're trying to keep your heart rate in a certain zone, whether it's 130 to 150 beats per minute, or if you're trying to keep it 70% of your max in that range during your recovery workout, this is where the 5-count inhale, 7-count exhale can be extremely helpful as well. And I highly recommend practicing that. The one thing that a lot of folks will talk about is, do we need to breathe through the nostrils? Do we need to breathe through the mouth? Nostrils work better. So, and then pursed lips and some nostril exhale. There's a lot of data as to which ones work better, but I have found that at least if you get the inhale through the nose and the exhale kind of as a combo, it seems to kind of be the overall best way to do things. But each person is individual. Keep that in mind. All right. So we've talked about keeping the heart rate in check. We've talked about how to recover after a workout. We've talked about what to do with stress in life. And really watching your heart rate and breath with every stressor that comes in life. When you start to feel that little bit of panic, the heart starts to speed up, or you start to hear poof, poof, poof in your ear or neck, and you know that you are responding to some type of stressor, engage the breathing. Get the breathing going. If you have a device like a Fitbit or an Apple Watch or even the Morpheus system that I mentioned earlier, and you can see where your heart rate is at, work to breathe your heart rate down. It can be extremely helpful in monitoring heart rate to help you with monitoring stress and get your energy back. Is it going to happen overnight? Heck no. You have to train this. You have to train your body to get rid of fatigue. You have to train your body to take that sympathetic fight or flight mode switch and move it towards the parasympathetic state. Research has found through Navy SEALs, tactical training, all of the folks that are in high stress situations where they need to preserve their life, breathing is the ticket, and really being able to control their breath keeps their energy up, keeps them focused and alert, and keeps them calm, cool, and collected under stress. And you can do this too. You can apply it to your life, apply it to your workouts so that your workouts aren't contributing to your fatigue, and go from there. I'm going to be putting a lot of resources on my podcast notes at drjkrausnd.com. So head over there after this podcast and check them all out. Now, if I've talked through all of this and you're like, oh, man, doc, that's a lot of info. I don't know if I could do it on my own. Keep in mind, I do have a course. It's an 8-week course where we're working on just getting rid of that fatigue, working on really diving in on training the mindset and training you to help you fight fatigue for good and being able to help you manage all of this in times of stress. At the same time, it helps with balancing some hormones. It also helps with getting off some of that little extra lingering weight that you might be super frustrated about. So if you are interested in that, head over to my website, drjkrausnd.com. I have little buttons that you can click on in terms of scheduling a appointment with me to chat about your goals so that we can make sure that we're a good fit. And I spend a good time, about 45 minutes on the phone with you for free, just discussing where you're at so we can get clarity and figure out what I can do to help you to end fatigue for good. All right, folks. You have survived another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Kraus. Have a great day, whatever you're doing. Hey, health junkies, Dr. Janine Kraus here. I hope you enjoyed my podcast. Guess what? I have a Facebook group. It's called Anti-Aging Health Tips with Dr. Janine Kraus. So if you want a little bit more of The Health Fix podcast, head over to my Facebook group and let's chat. Now, I'm also offering a health transformation and restoration program. It's a one-on-one with me, and it's for folks who are sick and tired of going to doc after doc and health coach after health coach and not seeing the results that they want and deserve. In my program, I'm working with folks with transformation. So this isn't just a light program. This is a big deal. I'm going to change how you think about your health and your life kind of program. And I'm super excited to offer it to folks. And if you are at all interested, we should talk. I'm offering 45 minutes free with me chatting to see if and how I can help you. And you can get all the details over at my website, drjkrausnd.com. All right. You've survived another episode of The Health Fix. I'm your host, Dr. Janine Kraus. Have a great day, whatever you're doing.
Subscribe, rate, and share info.